Hi, this is Alan Chartok, and I'm delighted to be in conversation today with the Lucky Five. The Lucky Five is a hard-swinging jazz band that blends swing and gypsy jazz to create a unique foot-stomping blend of music that appeals to a wide range of music lovers. The Lucky Five performs both original compositions as well as putting a new spin on old jazz standards. The band consists of Jonathan Talbot on violin, Don Mickelson on trombone, Kip Bianco on guitar and vocals, Matt Downing on bass, and Brian Cantor on drums. The Lucky Five also draws from its pool of talented musical connections between the Berkshires and New York City to create bigger bands, as many as 8 and 10 piece when the occasion calls. The boys are also known to bring in guest musicians of the highest caliber on a regular basis, so you never know what you're in for when you take in a Lucky Five show. The band brings verve, high energy, and an unpredictable impulse to the tradition of jazz from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, grooving deeply and keeping feet moving on the dance floor. You can find out more at www.theluckyfive.com. We're delighted you're here. You know, I've been hearing your band for a couple of years now, or several years now. And of course, I watched some of you growing up, which is one of the reasons why you're here. Well, anyway, I played in bands when I was a younger guy. Nothing as good as you guys. Actually, the band's name was The Satellite, for Music Out of This World. And there was always a certain amount of contention about, you know, what we were going to play, who was playing bad, who was playing good, you know. And inevitably, it ended up in what we call a band fight. All bands end up in a band fight, as you probably know. And so the question, Kip Bianco, I want to start with you is, how do you keep things sane?
I was just actually thinking while you said that, we could actually probably demonstrate a band fight for you very, very clearly right now if you would like. No, we don't want to do that. You know, I've been in a lot of bands over the years, and this particular group of guys here get along so well. Obviously, we will disagree on certain points, but keeping this one sane has been really easy. I mean, I think we're all lucky, no pun intended, to be surrounded by friends. We are all easygoing.
That could go south very quickly, as I have found out.
It can. It is. Yeah, you're right. You don't want to get in business with a friend, and we're lucky so far. I think that we all see eye to eye on everything, so... You know, knock on wood, so far it's been very amiable and there hasn't been any drop-down, drag-out fights.
Is this a democracy? Is this band a democracy?
Well, there's some kind of ongoing jokes. One of them is, you know, band members fall into a certain role when you're performing. One of mine is, you know, I often call a lot of the tunes.
We're listening to Jonathan Talbot, the wonderful violin player. Okay, Jonathan, carry on.
So I think to everyone's consternation, sometimes we look at each other, we're like, what are we playing next? Someone calls a tune and I'll override it.
Oh, is that right? That sort of makes you the head guy.
No, absolutely not.
But is there ever any post hoc, propter hoc discussion as to whether or not when you call the beat was too slow or too fast?
That comes up once in a while.
This is Kip.
But we quickly move on. You know, it's, well, we played that one too slow. Maybe next time we'll try to pick it up. But you never give the stink eye. And, you know, I don't think anybody holds grudges.
Who brings in the business? In other words, is it everybody's job to sort of find jobs? I've known bands where whoever brought in the business becomes the leader for that night. And they change the name to the Jonathan Band or the Kip Band or whatever else. But that doesn't happen here, does it?
It doesn't really. I mean, the Lucky Five has been kind of a long, I don't know, my fellow bass player Matt Downing over here and myself.
And my neighbor, Matt Downing, yes.
And Alan's neighbor up on the hill.
On the Pig's Lane, yes.
we kind of started this thing together. Like, I would have to sit down and calculate how many years it's been. Maybe 4 or 5 years at least. And it's gone through different personnel. But we've gone out and kind of seeked business together, and, you know, and then it's become word of mouth. So there's not one single person that's been going out and trying to get work. You know, I think it mostly comes to us. And it's a democracy.
Kip, you're fast becoming the band for the Berkshires, and there are others, of course. But it's an amazing group of people who really know what they're doing. I mean, I'm so impressed when I watch you guys that, you know, would somebody get kicked out of the band if you had them? Or has anybody been kicked out of the band who's not good enough to keep up?
No, absolutely not.
Out.
I mean,
no, absolutely not.
You know what it is? This is always a funny joke amongst musicians. I think it's musical differences. They always chalk it up to, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that is the case. I mean,
let's remember the Beatles, of course.
The Beatles. Actually, Don and I had a conversation on the way here today about the Beatles and those kind of things. And I think it's, you know, as the personnel has changed and progressed, it's just been stylistic differences.
So Don, the trombone player, what were you actually talking about when you were talking about the Beatles with Kip earlier?
Well, we were talking about band politics.
And
the question of whether the guitar solo on Something, the George Harrison song, is George or Eric Clapton. Because I heard a story once that they'd brought in Eric after the fact and replaced George's solo.
Yeah, we hear those stories about Ringo, too.
Right, that, Ringo, too.
Said Ringo, you know, it wasn't Ringo that they brought somebody else. You know, he was a personality, but that they had other. And he, of course, replaced somebody else who just didn't make it. Stu Sutcliffe. And so I guess I want to know, Jonathan, you look like the fiddler from Fiddler on the Roof. Jonathan Talbot. I have to describe him to you. He's got a sort of Tevye hat on. He's got, you know, a well-trimmed beard. And, you know, he looks like he could have been standing on the roof doing that. Has anybody else made that point?
Yes, a lot. In fact, just recently, just a little concert at Camp Hill Ghent for a retired community.
Wonderful place,
yeah. Someone kept asking me to play something from Fiddler on the Roof.
And you wondered why they were asking you, and then you figured out it's because you look exactly...
But I know nothing about it, but from my head, I know there is a, you know... I tried to pluck out if I were a rich man. I've never played anything.
So when the band plays, this is a good question, I think, remembering it from my old band days, and somebody comes up to you and asks you to play a perfectly ridiculous song which you just couldn't know. Now, in your case, you might know it, but in my case, playing with the Satellites playing trumpet back in the day, and somebody would come up and say, hey, play the Orange Blossom Special. What? Play the Orange Blossom. Yeah. What do you do when somebody asks you? I mean, you got to be nice, right? You can't go say, go away, can you? What do you do? There must be some way in which you've sort of figured it out. My twin brother and I had this band together and several other people, and people come up and say, hey, you guys look alike. You look alike. Are you twins? No, we're triplets, but we never talk about George, we would always say.
If someone asks you to play Freebird, I think all you have to do is invite them up and say, why don't you sing it for us?
Oh, yeah.
They'll lay off.
Yeah, yeah. Has anybody ever tried to take you up on such an invitation?
Oh, boy. I mean, yeah. I think it has probably come up. Maybe not with this band, but it's funny you mentioned the Orange Blossom Special, because we've played bluegrass in the past, and we would get that all the time. And sometimes we would have a fiddle player with us that could pull it off, and sometimes we wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you skirt the issue as quick as you can, you know? You say, next time we'll get you, or
have you ever
pretend
had
not to hear them.
Have you ever had a mean drunk?
Besides Jonathan?
I'm a very nice drunk.
Okay, so I'd love it if we could hear another song.
Yeah.
What can you do for us?
We'll give you a little taste of some singing here and kind of an upbeat number, and it's an old one. A song called Sweet Sue. Boys?
That. Some of you are married, right? A couple of you are married.
Yeah, I think true thing that. Three of us are.
Three of you are.
Two of us aren't.
Two of you aren't. Do you get groupies coming to your performances, who want Jonathan?
There could always be more.
We'll let one of the single guys speak to that question.
So I've often wondered about where you play. If you play in a concert, that's great. Everybody sits there and they listen to you and they carry on. But you also have to make a living. So sometimes you play in bars, right? And there's a lot of clinking of glasses, and some people are talking to each other, a little loaded. How do you handle that? I mean, is that just part of the game?
We just shut our eyes and blow, I think. We just
Is that what it is?
Keep playing and try to hear each other and have fun.
And amplification.
Amplification. Don Mickelson, you started talking on that, so I want to go a little further with you on it. Don't you ever have the urge to just say, will you please just shut up over there?
Maybe a little bit of the urge, you know, but I have a good leash on that, I guess.
Don, where did you learn how to play the trombone?
Where did I learn?
Yeah.
Grade school band, I guess, to start off with. I started when I was a kid.
And where was that?
That was in Wilmington, Delaware.
Really?
Yeah. And then, I went to school at Indiana.
Indiana University?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful school for music,
it
right?
Is. Yeah, it's great. And spent a couple of years working on the Strip in Las Vegas.
Really?
And I spent 30 years in New York City.
Uh-huh. Did you play in pit?
Yeah, played Broadway shows and jingles and Latin bands and you name it.
Come on, Don, name a few artists you've played with.
name a few.
It's quite a pedigree.
Sure.
Oh, boy, I know what you're going for.
Well, John will help us. Go ahead, John.
There's the King.
Oh, really?
My first gig after college, believe it or not, was a tour with Elvis.
Really?
That Elvis, yeah, not the other Elvis. Yeah.
The real?
What was he really like?
Then, oh, boy, here we go.
And then I got to follow up with that one. About 6 weeks later, I did a gig with an Elvis impersonator. And wasn't too happy about the career trend right there.
Yeah. So what was it like playing with Elvis?
Well, this was towards the end of his career and life, sadly. Mm-hmm. I guess it was his second to last tour.
Yeah.
And he was not a happy camper, it didn't seem, you know. And he was very insulated from us.
Yeah. Makes sense. Did you ever move to the Berkshires, or are you still in New York City full-time?
No, I've been here 6 years now, full-time.
And what brought you to the Berkshires?
I came here to bring my daughter to be in the Great Barrington Rudolf Steiner School.
Oh, you know, I live on a place, some people call it the Hill in Great Barrington.
I used to live right around the corner from you.
But some people call it Steiner Hill because there are so many Steiner people who have come there and, you know, and live there.
It's a great school, and it was just the right place for my daughter. And I did it for her, and it's been the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm so happy to be here.
And you go back to the life ever if you get invited? No.
Very rarely.
And so how
do you... If we got gigs down there, I'd be happy to do it. But I spent a long time there and don't feel the need to go and hang out.
And how do you make a living?
I do some software development for a company I've been with for a long time that you can work remotely. Once you could work remotely, we all scattered to the winds. And so I'm here and telecommute during the day.
You got a great voice. Have you done radio?
I haven't, but I'd like to.
Yeah, you sound terrific.
Do you have any openings here?
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan, what's your story?
I was born in Portland, Oregon, and then I went
sort of like Great Barrington. I mean, there are points of light in the United States. Portland is one of them, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Great Barrington is another one of them. Aspen, Colorado is another one of them. So you were born in Portland. What did your folks do?
My mother is a nurse, or was a nurse. My father is a writer, philosopher. He was a organic farmer in the 70s. Writes about technology and science.
What did they think about your becoming a musician?
They've been supportive of everything I do. They've been happy. And being a musician wasn't my first career necessarily. It's kind of coming later to me. I was originally a naturalist. I taught nature education to children and adults.
Where'd you do that?
Everywhere from New Jersey to Seattle, Washington.
Another one of those places.
Yeah, another one of those places.
Yeah. Good for you. That's great. Kip Bianco, of course, we know your genesis, great mother, great father. John, your father was a historically important social studies teacher in Great Barrington, and most people had Mr. Bianco, who was, quote, very tough.
That's what they tell me. But I was lucky not to have, I couldn't have him. But so who, I was lucky.
As in Lucky Five.
And, Lucky Five.
And he also was sort of the, for a long time, the chief politician of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, ran the town.
That's right.
And nobody fooled with him.
That's right. Yeah, he was a history teacher for 34, 35 years, and he was on the board of selectmen and the head of selectmen for 30 some years, and then when he retired from both, he dropped off and he lays low now. And
went to Maine.
He went to Maine. He came back. He's now in the Berkshires again. And you know. You don't even have to ask me, do you?
No, that's what a program is all about.
No, I know.
That's what we're doing here. We're trying to find out a little something. Did your pop think it was a good idea for you to become a musician?
he's never discouraged me from doing anything. I don't know that in hindsight, if he maybe could pick a career path for me, I don't know that he would have picked music, especially back then, because when I was growing up, I got bit by the rock and roll bug, and then it got harder rock and a little heavy metal at times. And then luckily I saved myself from that and worked my way back towards the acoustic spectrum. But we were playing some pretty hard, loud rock and roll when I was a kid, and with Marshall stacks in the basement, and you know, so it was tough, I think, for him and probably the whole neighborhood in general. But he's always been supportive. I mean, same thing like Jonathan said, he's, you know.
And your mom is a wonderful person, too.
She's a great woman, and they're both, still
a great
around.
Influence.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So, Matt Downing, tell us a little bit about what your genesis has been. I know one thing. I know your parents are among the best supportive parents I have ever seen. I don't think I've ever been in a gig of yours where your folks haven't been there.
I know, me either. They'll travel far. They're great.
Yeah, they've been wonderful. How'd you learn to play the bass?
Well, Kip and I were going to a bluegrass night at Tom Barnes' house from the Beartown Mountain Ramblers back in the day, and I was playing mandolin, and Kip was way better than I was. So
on the mandolin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so the only instrument missing for us to actually put it together a band was a bass, and so I went and rented one, and we did our first gig like 3 weeks later. And so I just crammed it and figured it out playing bluegrass.
Well, you are a great bass player.
Oh, thank you.
But the bass is a huge instrument. It's a pain in the, you know what, to carry this thing around and to come in and out. And when my band played, it was the drums, trying to get the drums over the subway turnstile, which was always difficult. But tell us about adventures of a bass player.
Well, this bass is early 50s K bass that once did fall off of the top of my car.
Really?
I think it was right on 87 going to a gig. And it survived somehow. It was hanging and dragging.
It's indestructible.
And I used to do that all the time, and I don't do that anymore.
You don't put it on the top of the car?
No.
Not like Mitt Romney and the dog. So I guess I want to know whether or not the bass gets its due respect in a band.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of bass solos, per se. So when they try and make me play one, I usually just say, oh, no, it's all right.
Yeah.
I like the rhythm of it.
Uh-huh.
Just getting the timing right with the rhythm section. That's what I enjoy.
How much does a big bass like that cost?
Well, this one, if it was in better shape, well, maybe $2,500. Right. But you can go all the way up to 20, 30, 40,000.
Is there such a thing as a Stradivarius bass?
Jonathan,
this fiddle player who works for Francis Morris, the great restorer.
Yeah. I do some part-time work for him. I wish I did more. They're great there. I'd have to ask Francis Morris, probably. I mean, cellos, I'm not sure, but yeah, there's got to be
a
couple basses.
Yeah. Yeah, we know there's violas, and we know there's violins. Yeah, Stradivarius.
I would assume, I mean, there's definitely old Italian basses, and Strad must have made them.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, now I guess I want to talk to our drum player, and Brian Cantor is the drummer. Brian, how hard is it to play drums in a jazz band?
I find it very difficult, actually,
really?
Just because my background is in rock playing, kind of like Kip's.
Yeah.
So it's consistently a challenge, but like Matt, I like to just kind of find the groove and try to stay there with the bass player, you know, try to swing.
So is there ever a bad, my job is to try to make trouble. Is there ever a bad moment between the two rhythm guys, the bass player and the drum player?
Actually, Matt Downing is one of my closest friends in the world.
Well, that can change.
We've never had a problem.
Yeah.
Yet.
And so, first of all, what's your background? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in one of the other great points of light in the country, Long Island.
Oh, yeah, that
New
is
York.
A great point of light.
Yeah, I grew up on Long Island. My dad was a fantastically talented Hammond B3 player.
Hammond B3.
Yeah. So he
that's
kinda
a keyboard, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a great organ.
Yeah.
He got me into music at a young age. I started playing drums when I was pretty young and have stuck with it. I went to school in the city. I live in Brooklyn.
Where'd you go to school?
Drummers Collective.
No kidding. There's a school called the Drummers Collective.
Yeah, it's true.
And how good do you have to be in a school for musicians?
I guess
say that
as good as I was at the time.
Yeah, yeah,
which
that's a good answer.
Very good, I think.
Well, no, I mean, I know people who've gone to, for example, Music and Art, go in as a clarinet player. And then they find out there are 247 clarinet players, all of which are better than they are.
Yeah, that,
you know,
that's...
And then they never, ever pick up the instrument after they walk out of there. So respond to that.
There's definitely some dropout effect. I know a lot of Berklee students who didn't complete the program, but went on to keep playing and are wonderful musicians. Kip.
Oh, Kip.
That, yeah.
You went to Berklee, right?
I did one semester, and I fall exactly into the category you guys are speaking
Which
of.
Which is what? Right now.
Well, I shouldn't say that I dropped out because I was overwhelmed, but I felt like I was going to lose myself real quick. You know, it was just, I was overwhelmed, but it wasn't the right environment for me to be around mostly guitar players. It seemed like thousands of guitar players that were just virtuosos, and that's not exactly what I wanted to do, and I just felt like I was lost in the ocean, you know?
Yeah, my first 2 weeks at the drum school was the most daunting couple of weeks of my life. It was just drummers playing, doing rudiments all the time, and I just felt overwhelmed by it, but somehow I kind of powered through, and it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Has anybody from your group become world famous?
Andy Bean, world fame.
Well, the name escapes me, but I'm sure that's not...
Andy Bean of the Two Man Gentleman Band.
Well, of course.
We do play with various people, as you mentioned in the introduction, that sit in from time to time, and, you know, maybe...
How's that determined? Somebody says, I want a nine-man band, and say, okay, we got to go find another four or something like that?
Yeah, it's usually a private event. Usually it's, you know, most often it's a wedding, and they want to dance, and as we're working out the details, we say, well, you know, we have a quintet, but we know wonderful horn players. Usually we would like to add some horns and make it a bigger band.
Yeah, I've seen you do that, yeah.
So we have some great players that we can choose from, and if the budget is there, we'll bring them in, and it makes for a, you know, 8-9-10 piece orchestra, which is a huge sound, and we do that when we can.
Yeah. Who gets to pick them? I mean, I only say that because I keep referring back to my days with the Satellites, which were that the piano player always wanted to pick his mother's friend's son, who was a really bad accordion player, and the rest of us resisted this like crazy. In fact, that's what ended up causing the ultimate band fight at the end, where people were throwing things and, you know, at a gig, which was not pleasant.
Yeah.
So who picks them?
We all have come to, I guess, probably agree on the players that we like to play with. I mean, certainly it's a stylistic thing, but it almost always boils down to availability, I think, you know, because the guys that we try to get are busy working musicians that are... you know, a couple guys in particular that it's very hard to get. You know, I've tried a certain trumpet player we tried to get 10 times in a row, and he's always
busy.
He has another gig.
So then you don't do it anymore.
So when we can get him, we can. Yeah. And that's usually what it boils down to.
Right. Do any of you in this room, because you keep throwing names at me about this and that, I never heard of them, but have any of you ever read any of the Nero Wolfe detective stories? Well, he was a fat detective. I recommend it to all of you. It's a fabulous, fabulous series by Rex Stout. And when Nero needed another detective, he would go to these other two guys, you know, who would come in and who really wanted to be his, you know, his assistant, as opposed to Archie Goodwin, who lived with him forever, lived in the place forever. I don't know why I raised this with you, but, you know, this whole business about who comes on and supplements the band becomes relatively important. So what else are you going to play for us?
We'll do a number called Blue Drag, another old one. I think most of what we do are old standards, and this one comes through various bands, but there's a great Django Reinhardt number that we pull from a little bit. Blue Drag. Thank you.
Just fine. Wonderful. Just wonderful. So is Django Reinhardt a hero to any of you? I mean, I can't ever forget that wonderful Woody Allen film in which this guy was always chasing the gypsy, end quote.
Sweet and Low Down.
Sweet and Low
Down.
Yeah,
that's great.
It was one of my favorites. I don't think it did that well, but I loved it. I thought it was
great. Emmett Ray, was that his name? Emmett Ray, yeah.
The fictional guitar player, yeah.
So I wanted to ask each of you, that brings to mind the question of who were your musical heroes? Who were they? And I guess we'll start at the far end of the room with Don Mickelson. Don, the trombone player, who are your heroes?
I'd have to say J.J. Johnson was a huge inspiration for me, especially when I was starting off. Frank Rosolino was also a huge inspiration to me. But there have been many. I've been fortunate to hear a lot of them and sometimes play with them or even take lessons sometimes.
Interesting. And when you're taking a lesson from a master musician, how does that go? What do they do? What are you expecting of them?
That can vary wildly from one to the other.
So they listen to you, and then they say, or you could do
sometimes
this.
Sometimes they listen to me. Sometimes it's just I'm just kind of taking it in, what they're doing and saying. Sometimes it's easy. It's It's just as much as going through a warm-up routine, something like that, but just trying to absorb everything that they say and do is how that goes.
Of the wind instruments, which is the hardest?
Well, trombone, of course.
I've always heard it was the French horn. Is that wrong?
I think that...
You've got a big old mouthpiece, you know, that's different. Although I'm looking at your embouchure, your lips, and you don't look like what was once described to me as a prerequisite for being a trombone player, which are big fat lips. You don't have those.
Well, I'm missing a collagen shot, I think. you know, you could say some instruments are easier than others, but... It comes down to whatever level of mastery you want.
Sure.
It's always a challenge.
But if you listen to the BSO, for example, you hardly ever hear a bad note coming out of a trombonist. But if you listen really carefully to the French horns, you can hear a blooper every once in a while.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
I have no comment on that.
I have no comment on that. That's great. Okay, so Jonathan, you're the fiddle player. Who are your heroes?
You know, I always really enjoyed listening to the classical guys and girls. Heifetz. I mean, I sound nothing like them at all, but I love listening to them. There's a whole slew. I mean, they're all great. They're very inspiring to me. Jazz violinists, I listened to them a bit, but then I kind of stopped because I realized I'd rather listen to horn players. Don't want to keep listening to something that's, the same instrument that's going to be so, you know, it's already hard not to play idiomatically in, you know, on one's own instrument. So it's good to listen to other instruments and be influenced by that.
Do you ever think that you just have to work harder to be even better?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you practice a lot?
Till I'm dead, I'm sure. I practice a bit. I have a little bit of a syndrome of playing, you know, like 10, 12 instruments and being spread a little thin because I love all these different instruments. So I'm constantly working on how to, you know, play in all these different things. But, you know, the closest I've gotten to, like, real classical, I've been giving improvisation lessons to a player from the Boston Symphony that you
really
mentioned about. I'm not going to mention the name because maybe they don't want to know that they're slumming in jazz.
But, slumming.
Well, it's great to sit there at the Boston Symphony and just watch the players and the intenseness of what they do.
Thoroughbred stallions, someone described them once. They're just phenomenal workhorses.
They're unique
and just the best of the best.
Roselle and I were fortunate enough once to be given seats A, 8, and 9 in front of Joshua Bell and looking up at him. And if he sweated, which he did, it was going to land on you, which it didn't. And it's amazing what some people can do on that instrument. It's astounding. Okay. Kip, the guitar player and the mandolin player, you haven't played mandolin today. Is mandolin still your instrument?
Yes and no. I mean, it is. I don't play it a lot anymore. When a bluegrass gig comes along and we get the boys together, I'm back on it, and it's...
That's a different band?
It's a different band, yeah. There's a couple different configurations of our side bluegrass projects.
Yeah, and what's that called, that band?
We have a band called the Marty Jimmins Band. We have another band called the Hay Rollers, and these are different sets of guys, you know, around New York State and Berkshire County.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a difference between the way the New York State guys play and the Berkshire County guys play?
It really will change on any given night and depends on the venue, you know, and whether they're serving free alcohol... Or we have to pay for our own.
Is there ever a five-string banjo in your...
As much as we can.
Yeah, because that is the best instrument.
It's hard to even call it bluegrass without a five-string banjo, in my opinion.
You know, I've always wondered about that. I see some of these faux bluegrass bands, and they advertise themselves as bluegrass bands, and I go because I'm a banjo player, and
there's no banjo
there. I said, what kind of nonsense is this? There's no banjo to this. But who are your musical heroes?
Oh, boy, there's a lot of them. But in a nutshell, off the top of my head, I would have to put Bill Monroe at the top of the list for the mandolin player and the father of bluegrass music.
Indeed.
And then in the improvisation and jazz spectrum, I would have to say that there's a lot of horn players like Jonathan. A few of the giants. Lester Young is probably my favorite. Coleman Hawkins is right there. Charlie Parker. Bird's been a huge influence on me lately. And then Django Reinhardt's in there too, for sure.
Okay, so let's go to Matt Downing, our bass player. Matt, is anybody who's your hero?
I really wanted these guys to play Django music. It's always been my favorite. He's my favorite musical mind and soul. That
unbelievable. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, brought me to tears more than anyone else.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean tears?
Just sometimes growing up, I'd sit there. Well, not that long ago, but just sit there And listening to it just brings me to this emotional place. It's just beautiful.
How come nobody ever talks about Grappelli, his musical partner?
Yeah. Well, I love his playing too. It's kind of that whole sound that makes me feel that way. Yeah. And my other heroes, Earl Scruggs for sure, and Bill Monroe in that era of bluegrass.
Okay, so drums are, Brian Cantor, an interesting instrument in that, you can be real good. We in the Berkshires are very lucky. We have one of the best drum players of the world in Kenny Aronoff. So who do you aspire to be?
Yeah, I have several favorites. I think in the jazz realm, my favorite has always been Art Blakey. Ah. I love his bombast. He can really just pound the drums and swing as hard as anyone else with no frills, So I really love his playing. For the earlier stuff, I think Krupa is the guy.
Yeah, he certainly is.
He's magic. He can just speak in a similar way to what Django can do or what Louis Armstrong can do, and just kind of tap the well at all times and always be saying something new and fresh. So I love his playing for that. I think overall, Jim Keltner is my favorite drummer. And he's session drummer from 60s and to today. His pocket is as deep as it can go.
What does that mean, pocket deep?
The 2 and 4 in jazz music and rock music it's kind of where the groove is.
The 2 and 4 beat.
Yeah, beats 2 and 4. Yeah. So the deeper you can land on those beats, I know it's math, but there's some magic in the math, and the deeper you can get in there, the better, I think, the music is. And he's as deep as I've heard.
I was just thinking about this. I love the old movie channel. It's one of my favorite things because I'm old and I like to watch it.
AMC?
Yeah, AMC. I love to look. And quite frequently, they'll have band pictures. So you'll see Krupa and you'll see all of these other guys playing in some really stupid film. And these people really were, as I was growing up, real heroes. You had Ray Anthony on the trumpet, or this guy or that guy. These people were musicians who had the presence of a modern day, rock and roll singer or rock star. You don't see that anymore with musicians in which they have sort of world fame.
Yeah, well, I don't really pay attention to the ones who have a lot of fame these days. I think I tend towards more obscure music. But yeah, the jazz guys of the day were rock stars.
Does that ignite any lights in any of your heads? I mean, I think this is a very nice band, but I don't think you're egomaniacs. I think you're really nice people. But do you have to be an egomaniac to really excel?
Probably a lot of the top celebrities and stars are. You could make an argument that they're
on the business
egomaniacs.
Side.
Yeah.
You're just nice people.
But it just doesn't seem worth it to me.
No, that's right. I like that. I like that attitude a lot. It just doesn't seem worth it to me. Whereas to others, they reach for the hook to the star. But what I get from you guys is that you just like to go out and play, as we say, play out.
Yeah, we're all, honored to be at least some of us, making a living from it or partially from this. So, that's great. Life's short. And I think you can't take yourself too seriously. And we try to do our best professionally. Wherever we're playing, we play our best and we play well and we make people happy. But otherwise, you can only do what you can do. And we're all enjoying it.
Have you ever thought, like the country gentleman did, of buying your own bar or your own restaurant and, saying, okay, that this is our place. You want to see us, you got to come here to see us. Has that ever occurred to anybody here?
Yeah, absolutely. I've thought about that on and off. Matt and I probably had that discussion 50 times in the past few years, and that would be amazing. The financial side of it, though, is just hasn't come together yet.
I was thinking that your parents could all sort of invest in this thing.
That could be something to run by them, yeah. Maybe maybe collectively they could all pool their money.
Yeah, yeah. So how important is it to have a day job in this music business?
Depends on how simply you want to live or how richly.
The roof comes in handy, I like to say.
So. Yeah. Well, the guy I live the closest to, of course, is Matt Downing, and he lives right down the street from me, and he lives in a house that could only be described as something that is so unique and so special that if you love Little Abner and you love Dog Patch, this house is one of those great, great, great houses, and I never want him to move. He has chickens, he does this, that, and it's really, although I understand the raccoons have not been kind to the chickens.
No.
Yes, right. Okay, so I need you to play us out
How about Swing 13 into something like Nuage, you know?
That's good. Swing 13 into Nuage.
You like that? Alan approves. Yeah, we really wanted to play. I don't know that we've played any of your of our original compositions, so we wanted to at least get one in. We write a lot of stuff.
Great.
So we'll do one here. We'll do one called Swing 13 that we wrote maybe a year ago or so.
One, two, three, four.
We've been in conversation today with the Lucky Five, featuring Jonathan Talbot on violin, Don Mickelson on trombone, Kip Bianco on guitar and vocals, Matt Downing on bass, and Brian Cantor on drums. For more information, it's www.thelucky5, that's one word, thelucky5.com. Again, if you want to get these great guys, www.thelucky5.com.
Been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on the In Conversation with Alan series, or to order additional copies of this or any interview in the series, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us on the web at wamc.org. Thank you.